Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
I'm Dave Williams, and you're listening to ACB Radio's Main Menu, a regular look at technology from a blindness perspective. And quite often on this program, we speak to people from the assistive technology industry. And this week, we're joined by Robert LeBlond, who is involved with the Assistive Technology Centre. And we'll come on to talk about what that is shortly. But first, Robert, let's start with you. Are you blind, Robert? And how long have you been using assistive technology?
I myself, Dave, am not blind or vision impaired. My wife and both of my kids, however, are. And I got into the assistive technology field, helping them back in the state of Maine, where we originally come from. And I'm a former computer programmer, and it just kind of evolved into its own business back there. And since then, I've worked in Colorado at Beyond Sight, and now we have our own place in Sacramento, California, the Assistive Technology Center. And we try to help folks get affordable and effective technology.
Okay, let's talk about some of those early days. And I mean, when you lived in Maine, what kind of time period are we talking about? Is this the 80s, the 70s, and what sorts of assistive technology were available to your family at that stage? And what made you decide that it was an area where you really wanted to work professionally?
Well, back in the mid 80s, which is when we started dealing with technology of any kind, back then was the good old or bad old days of DOS, and the brailler, the electronic brailler of the day was the M-Print, which, if anybody remembers that, was actually a modified Perkins brailler that just output one sheet of braille at a time from ASCII text. And the speech synthesizers of the day worked quite well with DOS, but with nothing else. And back then, OCR was, we were just thrilled to have it running at about 70% accuracy, and the scanners weighed about 80 pounds, and the computer weighed about 80 pounds, and you were never gonna have this happen so that you could carry something around and actually use it to scan and read with. So we've been through it all, the days of JAWS for DOS, and using the old Braille and Speaks as a speech box. And we actually did develop a technology years ago that was a fax to Braille technology, where people would fax us stuff and we would just send it through OCR of the day and the Braille transcription software of the day. And we were pretty successful with that. As far as what made us turn it into a business, you know, when you have a couple of blind kids, they have friends who also have a vision impairment, and back in Maine at that point in time was kind of like living in a third world country technology wise and so there was not a lot going on, and people just came to me to ask questions, and we figured out a lot of solutions to their technology problems, and so we kind of came into the business through the back door.
Yeah, because the assistive technology business, it's a small market, isn't it, really? There's not, you know, let's be honest, there aren't mega books to be made in this market. There are too few customers, and the R&D costs can be astronomical. you mentioned earlier that your background was in programming. How did you make that transition from being a programmer to being somebody who saw your future as being in assistive technology?
People generally, you'll find that are working in the adaptive technology field either are disabled themselves or have a family member or friend who are disabled, because you know, if you have the credentials that most people that I know in this business have, you could be making a ton more money doing other things. I could walk down the street to Avaya Technologies tomorrow and probably be making twice what I'm making or more. But it's a big call to social responsibility for a lot of people. And as I said, most people that I know in the industry have credentials which will enable them to work pretty much anywhere. But I was working programming electronic cash registers and business machines and mainframes, and that's back in the days when the PC was just starting to take root. And back then in school, my daughter, who is now living in Kentucky, actually got her first computer, and nobody around that knew how to actually configure the thing so that it would talk to her properly. We had the software, we had the hardware. I didn't know, you know, one end of a PC from the other. It was just completely different. Different world than working on the stuff that I was working on, but fortunately I was a quick study, and so we figured that out, and she got to do everything she needed to do in school on that old 386 with the 40 megabyte, yes, megabyte hard drive, and 4 whole megs of RAM, and things have really exploded since then. The thing about technology in general is that it's always changing, and with adaptive technology, you just have to keep up. It's a full-time job just to keep up with the stuff that's going on, and to see if you can make some leaps, you know, just by a few common sense decisions of maybe merging different technologies or marrying one technology to another. And I think that's pretty much what our strength is, and what my strength has always been, is taking different technologies and kind of gluing them together to create a third thing.
Yeah, your daughter's PC sounds rather like my first PC. Was there anything else sort of pre Beyond Sight that you wanted to mention? I mean, I see you were a professional musician at one stage. I'm not sure how relevant that is, although it's certainly interesting. Was there anything else from your past in terms of your credentials that you really bring to bear as somebody in the assistive technology field that you think it's worth highlighting at this stage?
Actually, let me just touch on the professional musician bit. It kind of does tie in. I was a keyboardist back in the 70s and early 80s, and that's when synthesizers were just starting to gain popularity. And back then, the synthesizers of that day did not have little cute preset buttons that you could hit and get the strings effect or the harpsichord effect or any of that stuff. You actually had to program things in, and it was a whole mess of patch chords, and you had to know the difference between envelopes and filters and pink sound and white sound, and so that kind of laid the groundwork for my being involved in the computer industry, because basically you had to program for each and every sound that you did. my background is I have a degree in music education from the University of Maine at Farmington. So I am or have been a teacher, even though I really have not taught music. I'm a Microsoft certified professional instructor. One of the courses that we do offer is a Microsoft Office certification, Microsoft Office Specialist certification online. And that's been very popular. And aside from that, those qualifications, I've been involved since about 1986 with adaptive technology. So I offer those as my credentials.
Yeah, and your company Perspectives, is that right? You were a reseller of adaptive technologies and providing transcription and training services for the 12 years from 87 before you became involved with Beyond Sight.
Yeah, that's correct. We were mostly a service business and did transcription and training and just a very little bit of actual product sales. And we got into the product sales very late in the game. I didn't really do a lot of product sales until I went to Colorado and started working with Jim. And as I said, that was quite an education.
Okay. Tell us about the whole Faxter Braille thing. I think you touched on it briefly earlier, that you feel that this was a first and that others have really run with this idea. Do you feel aggrieved? Tell us a bit about that, Bob, and where that came from and how that played out.
I really don't have any regrets about any of that. You know, when you're first starting in an industry, you're going to make some mistakes. And our mistake was taking the whole idea of the fax to Braille and using it solely as a service, when what we should have probably done is to package it more as a product, which Duxbury has successfully done. I mean, you can now use Duxbury software to bring in a fax and OCR the thing and send it to your Braille embosser, which is exactly what we were doing back 17, 18 years ago. But it was just an idea that kind of passed, and I figured, you know, we could have this, the OCR program and the Braille transcription program, and kind of show them how to hold hands, so to speak, and work together. It was a great service while it lasted. We used to have restaurants would fax us menus, and we could produce Braille menus for $20 over that type of line instead of the $200, $300, or $400 that some people did use to quote these restaurants to produce Braille menus. So we did a lot of that. A lot of people that just wanted to send notes to a blind friend, or the thing is, you can't bottle up ideas.
Tell us about your involvement with Beyond Sight, Bob.
I worked there for about 2.5 years, and I was ended up as the manager of the place, working under Jim Meisner. Learned a lot there. Jim's a great guy, and he's very very concerned about the clients that he serves, and he's a blind fellow himself, but he's a very, very dedicated guy. Beyond Sight is his brainchild of the one-stop shop for people that have any kind of vision impairment, and he's just done a fantastic job putting that together. Jim actually had these ideas. You know, he was, what I learned from Jim too is he was the big idea guy, and he had the idea for the first screenless laptop computer, and I'm sure everyone who's listening to this is probably familiar with the laptop, and that was just a great concept. And to take that idea of, you know, why not have a laptop that doesn't have a screen and make it more like a note taker and more convenient and lighter. And although you do get some funny looks when you go through airport security, they're a very nice machine to have. So Jim and I became fairly good friends, and I left only because my wife got a great job offer in Sacramento, California, and so we figured that we could set up shop down here and do our own little business out in Sacramento. But if that hadn't happened, I more than likely would still be working with Jim today.
How long were you with Beyond Sight, Bob?
I was there for about 2.5 years. I started as a tech support slash salesperson. And then my big passion has always been training. And so we find that there's a lot of problems with adaptive technology training, because you do find a lot of people who either know all about adaptive technology and not a whole heck of a lot about the mainstream stuff, or vice versa, or you have people that know a lot about both but just aren't equipped to teach, don't have, you know, the those teaching skills. And a lot of the time, people who are disabled kind of think that, oh, well, you know, I'm failing at this because of my disability, when in reality you're failing at it because you got a teacher that really can't teach you that well. So we have an online classroom, much like the room that you folks have at the ACB Radio, to talk to people online. We use a variation of the Chatterbox client. So I developed the online training at Beyond Sight, and after a while, I ended up being the assistant manager out there, and later on, just about a year ago, a little over a year ago, I left to move to Sacramento and do our own thing.
In July of this year, you decided that you really couldn't get enough of assistive technology and you weren't going to be away from it for any period of time, and you started the Assistive Technology Center.
The Assistive Technology Center is a place where you can come for training or to see new products. We basically deal with people that have vision impairments, but we also deal with folks who have learning disabilities or dyslexia. Basically, our main goal is to enable people to have access to information. So people who cannot easily access print for whatever reason, we help them to do so. We have a different philosophy. We think about the end users as far as being able to purchase their own equipment. So most of our end users do purchase their own equipment as opposed to receiving it through a government agency. So we try to keep things as affordable as possible. We scour the planet for good products, and we get the ones that we believe are the best product for the best price, and also that are easy to use. You shouldn't need to have an IQ of 275 in order to operate a scanning machine. That should be pretty easy to do, and so we have all of that there, all of that in mind. We have a couple of people that are on staff with us. I have a low vision specialist who works with us, and a technician who also works with us, and they are both blind people. We believe in, whenever I can, I hire folks that have a vision impairment, so long as they're qualified to do what they're supposed to do. And if you go to our website, you'll find out that our philosophy is kind of a takeoff on the old give a man a fish line, which is, if you give a man a fish, then you feed him for a day, If you teach a man to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. But if you're a person with a disability, sometimes you need assistance in getting to the river.
You, amongst other things, are a reseller of assistive technologies. Let's talk about your portfolio of products. Do you stock screen readers?
Yes, we have the Dolphin line of products, the Supernova reader magnifier and HAL screen reader, and the Lunar and Lunar Plus magnification softwares. We have those. Everybody says, geez, why didn't you go and get JAWS or Window Eyes or that type of thing? Again, if you're familiar with using the Dolphin software, it's just the easiest stuff to use. It's got great features. You can do stuff with HAL Screen Rigger that JAWS hasn't even thought of. And it has, it's the only screen software that I know that has full support for Citrix and Windows Terminal Server. So a lot of our clients are working in environments where they need to have that thin client support. In addition to that, we have CCTVs from Magnesight and Enhanced Vision Systems for people with low vision. We have the Portset reader, which is a British product, and it's a scan and read machine. A lot of seniors like that. We like the voices, and again, the price is less than most of the scan and read machines, and it's very simple to use. We've just started branding our own products. Oh, we also have the Trekker GPS device that we sell. We now offer the Book Courier, which your readers might, listeners might be familiar with. We have our very own computers, the Advantage computer, which is kind of a takeoff on the on-site laptop, only these are a little bit smaller. It's a screenless machine. You can order it with a screen. With the screen, the thing weighs about 2 pounds. Without the screen, it weighs 12 ounces, and a very powerful machine with a huge hard drive and a very punchy processor and USB 2 ports and DVD burner and very, very portable and compact. We have software for people with learning disabilities, such as read and write software, and also WYNN, W-Y-N-N, that's a Freedom Scientific product, and we use those softwares as well.
Let's talk about these screenless laptops that they seem to be increasing in number. I know the ACB store stocks some, and we've seen a few of these at the convention. I think the Portico, is that right? And you mentioned laptop already, and of course the product that you stock. Do you think these devices? Will supplant the expensive specialist note takers that are developed specifically for the blindness market, or do you think there's still a need for those products?
I honestly don't know what a person would want to have, why a person would want to have the note taker as well as a laptop or an Advantage or a Portico computer. They're small, they're lightweight. Actually, ours and the Porticos are also lighter than the basic note takers, the Packmates and the Braille Notes, and the all of those are actually a couple of ounces heavier, and they're more limited. That having been said, we like to work with off-the-shelf devices, and one of the products that we're looking at in the near future is a combination cell phone and PDA with speech and magnification. And that's an upcoming product that we hope to release in January or February of next year. But it's going to be based on like an HP cell phone / PDA. It's not going to require any specialized hardware or anything. And I think if you need to just take some notes or have a way to listen to stuff on the road, I would much rather buy an $800 device than a $3,000 device, and then have to go and buy a computer as well. I understand that in their day, those note takers were the way to go, but I don't have any. I was never interested in getting any. We will be featuring the Maestro from VisuAid, which is also built around the HP. I've seen that. That's a pretty impressive little device, and for $995, it's the best thing that's out right now. But it's voice only, has no magnification in case anyone does have a little vision, and we do find that people like to use that vision when they get it.
So I'm interested in exploring this with you, Bob. Philosophically, there are those who would argue that really a blind person needs to have a custom-designed interface that meets that blind person's requirements, so that the user is able to function as efficiently as possible and get information out as quickly as possible. And then the other side of the argument, I guess, are those who would argue that as blind people we should be using as much as possible the mainstream interface, PDA, desktop computer, laptop computer interface that our sighted peers are using. Where do you stand in all of that?
I believe that's a discussion that's going to go on for several years, and we're not going to put an end to it today. As long as you get to where you need to go, then you have done what's proper for you. And whether you think that you like that PacMate and you're going to use that, and you love it, and you don't want to have anything to do with our mainstream PDA, then that's fine. And some other folks are not going to want anything to do with the PacMate, and they're going to love our mainstream PDA. The end result is, are you both getting the information that you need to have in a timely manner, and can you input and save information in a timely manner? If you can do both of those things, then whatever your preference is, as long as it works for you, works.
But I guess what I'm driving at is that agencies and people who recommend assistive technologies, they have to decide, or someone within those organizations has to decide which products they feel are going to be most suitable for their clients. And mainstream interfaces are often seen as more difficult for a blind person to conceptualize, whereas an interface that's been designed from the ground up that gives a blind person that same access to information may well be seen as easier to use. Is there a danger that people aren't going to take these laptop type devices and mainstream PDA devices seriously enough?
I'm glad you mentioned that. VisuAid with the Maestro, I think, has the first best idea to bridge that gap. And if you haven't seen it, it's a very nice little device. It's an HP iPac, and there's a tactile membrane that fits over the touch screen. And so everything that's accessible to a sighted person via the touch screen is now accessible to a blind person via the tactile overlay. You can use it to read through notes files or take notes. You can record vocal notes. You can use it as an appointment calendar. You can use it to keep your contacts. More functionality is going to be added as time goes on, so you can actually use the web browser and the online email, send and receive email with the thing. And anybody who's familiar with a computer should be able to learn how to use a Maestro in about 15 minutes.
I guess what we have to say to people, you know, to be responsible is that find out what's available and decide for yourself. Only you are going to know what's going to work for you. And get a demo, you know, get a hands-on one of these devices and find out what you're going to be comfortable with. Let's talk about the DocuEdge system. What is that? How does that work? How does it differ from what people are familiar with? Most people listening to this program who have experienced OCR will typically have had a flatbed scanner, some OCR software installed on their desktop or laptop PC. That may well be specialist OCR software, or it may well be off-the-shelf OCR software. And typically you'd get your material, stick it on the scanner, and push the button, and away you go. What is the DocuEdge? How does that differ from what people are familiar with?
Well, I'll give you a little bit of background on the whole concept. We've been looking for a long time for a scanner that would be portable, extremely portable, and affordable and usable by blind folks. And we've tried many different kinds of pen scanners in the past. And the problem with those has always been that you have to see the line that you're scanning, because they scan kind of like you would highlight sentences in a textbook with a magic marker type of thing, you know, with one of those highlighters. And that's how you scan. So you scan one line at a time. If you don't know where those lines are, you can't scan the thing. So that kind of let out people who can't see the page. I was in at CompUSA a few months back, and I saw this device that looked like a short windshield wiper blade, a silver short windshield wiper blade. And that's the best way that you can describe it. Anybody that's seen this unit or has heard me describe it and then has seen it says, wow, it's really like a windshield wiper blade. And I said, well, what's that? And they said, well, it's a scanner. And the way that you use it is you take a sheet of paper or a book or whatever, and there's a button on the top, and you press the button to turn the scanner on, and then you drag the whole wand, that whole blade, down the face of the sheet of paper. So you actually scan in an entire sheet at once. You no longer need to know where the lines are, because you can scan in the whole piece of paper at once. The scanner is just a little bit wider than an 8.5 inch piece of paper. So it takes about 4 to 5 seconds to perform a scan. And when you're done the scan, the scanner automatically shuts itself off.
There's a couple of rollers on the bottom that help you keep that nice and straight and smooth. And all in all, you know, we saw it as a very nice thing. So I went home and I tried to get the manufacturer to send me one and explain to them what I had in mind, and they did. And the software was abysmally non-accessible. It was just completely graphic. No text labels were anywhere to be found. Everything was just a mess. The transfer software, the Twain interface to go between the scanner and the computer, completely inaccessible. However, it was Paperport software that was the transfer software, and way back when I was in the state of Maine, we had a very good relationship with people at ScanSoft. I called them up and I said, so let's see if we can't get a more accessible version of Paperport, a light version, and we can include that instead of with the hardware manufacturer has. And they said, fine. And it'll cost you a few bucks every time you want to put one on CD, but that was okay, because it was going to make it usable. And then I called the manufacturer and I said, you've got to make a few changes to your Twain interface and the installation program, and they did that for us. Of course, only our scanners come with that particular driver, the ones that they sent to us. Then we installed it and everything worked fine and the transfer software worked fine. And then we figured, well, now how are we going to do this, for OCR? And Paperport has OCR built in, and so we tried that. And Paperport OCR leaves a lot to be desired. So what we did was call back down to ScanSoft and said, hey, how about a version of OmniPage Lite that we can stick on here, and we'll give people a nice, powerful OCR solution as well. And so they said, okay. And it cost us a few dollars to do that. And now we have the OmniPage software as well. So that having been done, we now had a little scanner that worked fine. You didn't need to see to be able to use the thing. You don't need to be able to see to transfer the files to your PC. You don't need to be able to see to do the OCR. And the last piece of the puzzle was, could we make a manual for people who just are not real familiar with any kind of technology, because we knew we were going to be selling to a lot of end users that probably wouldn't be as familiar with technology as people like you and I are, and we wanted to make it out of the box accessible for folks. So we did an audio manual on CD that you can just pop into an audio CD, and it's also a doc file that you can read in Microsoft Word. And what it is just starts with a physical description of the scanner, which side is right, which side is left, which side is up, which side is down, and then walks you through step by step into transferring the files and doing the OCR and all the tips that you need to do.
Can we just go back to talk about the physical scanner itself? Because obviously most people who are listening to this are not going to have seen it. You described it as being like a windshield wiper. I think that was the phrase you used. So this is, presumably it's plastic, and so it's almost like a ruler, I'm imagining in my mind, that would go across the page horizontally, and then you would slide this thing down the vertical length of the page. Am I understanding that right?
Yes, Dave. You can scan either top to bottom or bottom to top or side to side. So you don't have to scan necessarily up and down because the software corrects for orientation. The thing is shaped, okay. It's not really like a ruler because it's not that thin. It's more like if you put two pens end to end, it would be probably about that length and that size. Kind of like a flattened out cigar type of thing. And you don't even have to be connected to your computer in order to scan. what you do is you scan in up to 100 pages at a time, and they're held in memory, the scanner's memory. And there's a small USB port on the right-hand side of the scanner on the end. And after you scan in all of your 100 pages, or however many of them, I mean, you don't have to scan 100. If you only scan 5 pages, then fine. And you can just hook the thing up to your computer through the USB port, and then you use the Paperport software to transfer the images from the scanner to the computer, and then you just run your OCR program on them. Like I said, we include the OmniPage software. However, you can use OpenBook or Kurzweil or FindReader or any other OCR of your choice. However, we only can offer tech support on the OmniPage product because that's what we know.
How is the device powered? Is there an AC adapter, or does it power through the USB, or the batteries? How does that work?
The device is battery powered. There's a rechargeable lithium ion battery, and it charges through your USB port, so that while you're downloading your image files to the computer, you are recharging the scanner battery. So by definition, there's always enough power to scan in as many pages as the device will scan. So if I scan in 10 pages, as I'm downloading those 10, I'm getting recharged to scan 10 more, up to 100 pages again. There's a nice little leather case that comes with the thing. It weighs 1.7 ounces. Just so folks know, what comes with the thing is a scanner and the CDs with all the software on it, and the USB cable. And we've actually found a few non-OCR uses for this. We have a list serve that is at coollist.com. It's the DocuEdge list. So anybody that wants to subscribe to that can either send us an email, or you can just go to the DocuEdge list on Coollist and subscribe to that. But we get some non-OCR uses for it. One fellow used it to scan in an image and of a contract, and use the fax software that's also bundled with Paperport. And he actually sent a fax using the little scanner. One fellow's used it as a copy machine, to scan in and send something out to the printer. People use it to scan business cards. My technician, who is a blind fellow, we most recently went to a convention in Los Angeles, and we had our little laptop computer and we had our little scanner, and for the first time he got to read the room service menu, because he could just scan in the room service menu and send it to the little computer. But we have, in essence here, what we've created is a reading machine that weighs less than 1 pound with our screenless laptop and the DocuEdge scanner. You can go anywhere and read anything, and you don't even need to take your computer with you. I've had some folks read at the local church bulletin board and just go down and scan sheets down. Obviously, something does not have to be flat on a table for you to scan it. It can be flat on a wall, and you can just scan and hold the scanner up to the wall and drag it down a page that's taped to a wall, and you can save that and then read that way. Of course, it does have the same limitations as other scanning devices. You can't read handwriting. There's no OCR program that will do that. The better the print, the better the scan. But the learning curve on these is just about 15 to 20 minutes before you start doing some really good scans. The problem that most people encounter when they do try to scan is that they take too long to scan. They think of this as being one of these old hand scanning devices like Logitech used to make 10, 12 years ago. And you had to have a real slow, methodical scan. This is a 4-second scan down a piece of paper, so it's a pretty quick scan, but that's the most common mistake everyone makes, is they take too long to scan a paper.
Presumably, I mean, it must be very difficult for each person to scan the page at the same speed. There must be some fairly sophisticated software going on there in order to determine what speed the user scanned the page in order to extrapolate and build the image.
Yeah, that's true, and it's very forgiving. I mean, I've seen some people do some scans at quite different speeds. Of course, if you do take too long, if you do a 10-second scan down the sheet, you're not going to get very good OCR out of that. So there is a bit of a not really a learning curve as much as a getting used to it curve, whereby you can do scans. But I've had one fellow who, and although I don't recommend it for scanning in entire books, people who go to a lot of meetings, you can scan in handouts, and if you have your laptop with you, then you can use that right there and read stuff that's being handed out at the meeting along with everybody else. Or you don't have to. You can scan them in for later use. You can scan them in to scan stuff in to reprint it if you want. And before you do decide to reprint it, you can OCR the thing to find out if it's really the file that you wanted to reprint. So it's a very, very handy device. We have sold a lot of these to the non-disabled community, but for people who have any kind of print-related disabilities, it's just been very nice. We have our new dealer, Enable Mart, in Washington and Oregon, and they've been selling a lot of these to folks with learning disabilities and dyslexia because it works so well with like the read and write software and the WIN software. It just it's just a real nice thing for any student to be able to carry around and use as a scanner, and they're just very lightweight, very cool gadgets, and with the OmniPage, your recognition accuracy on that is about 98-99% on a good printed piece of paper, and it does recognize columns, so you can scan in those magazine articles. We just we used it to scan in the voting guide in California here, and this last voting guide was a monstrosity of columns and tables and graphics, and it did do just about a 98% job when you took the entire voter guide with different kinds of print and different sizes. And generally speaking, you don't want to scan in any print lower than like an 8-point, and it really won't work very well on any print over a 14-point. So you got to bear those things in mind. It sees those as graphics, the very large print. So you might miss something that's in very, very big print. But the nice thing about it is it will scan any length of document because it's not bound by the size of the bed. So a lot of folks that we work with are lawyers and scan in legal size documents, or real estate agents, and they scan in legal size documents. You can't do that on a regular scanner. You can do that with the DocuEdge scanner.
Yeah, and of course, to buy the larger flatbed scanners, the A3 scanners and so on, can be extraordinarily expensive. Is it always going to be tied to that particular software? If people already have OCR software and perhaps they're in the market for a new scanner, are they going to have to switch software?
Oh, goodness, no. As I said, you can use the scanner with any software that you want. So if you have Kurzweil or OpenBook or Read and Write or FindReader or any of those, you can use whatever OCR you want to use. There is, however, an extra step involved when you do that. And the reason is the transfer software is our version of Paperport. There's no getting around that. The only way you can transfer the files from the scanner memory to the computer is through Paperport software. Paperport software saves all images in its own proprietary format, which is MAX. It's a file name .max. You can choose to save the file after that as a TIFF or a JPEG or a bitmap. But you can use any software you want, but there's an extra step. When you use the Paperport software, all you have to do is in the Paperport dialog, choose Send To, and choose Notepad, and it'll automatically run OmniPage in the background and do your OCR and send it up to Notepad or Microsoft Word or whatever text word processor you want to send it out to. So you can do either or. We include the OmniPage software because we wanted to make sure that if people did not have any kind of OCR, that they would at least have this to be able to use. And it allows them, if they want to upgrade to the OmniPage Professional from our OmniPage SE, then it saves them like $400 on the upgrade because you already have that entry-level product. A lot of people do like that OmniPage as well, and I, for one, have really preferred it with using the screen readers as well. But we wanted to make sure that it was the entire package that somebody could pick up for, you know, a reasonable price, that you wouldn't have to go and spend $1,000 to get an OCR program.
Okay. So this is the DocuEdge, available from the Assistive Technology Center. I'm Dave Williams. You're listening to ACB Radio's Main Menu, and we're in conversation with Robert LeBond. I guess we'd call you the proprietor of the Assistive Technology Center. Let's talk about the price then, because you were talking about driving down the price of assistive technology and not wanting to charge people $1,000 for their OCR software. What does the package consist of, and how much is it going to cost people?
Well, the package is the DocuEdge scanner itself, and then the leather case that protects the thing when it's in your pocket or your purse, the USB cable, and then the CD that has the OmniPage on it, and the CD that has the Paperport software and the drivers on it, and the CD that has our audio audio manual on it. And that is, we have an introductory price of that going on right now. It's $229 US. And after the first of the year, after January 1st, it's going to be $249 US. And that's it. We did believe that we'd keep it as affordable as we could. Our one big problem with the things has been keeping them in stock. Currently, I have my fourth order of 100 pieces that's supposed to be delivered on Tuesday, and they're sold before they hit my front door. So those are all gone already. Anybody who orders before January 1st of next year will get that introductory price, even though they have to ship after that. So I'm hoping I can get another batch or two in by Christmas time, because a lot of people are buying them as Christmas presents. However, right now, I don't even have any because they're all sold. But we're awaiting another order.
The proverbial hot cake springs to mind. So are we? Is there anywhere where people can try the DocuEdge? Is there anywhere people can get some hands-on training or demonstration of this equipment?
We go to as many of the trade shows as we possibly can. We cover obviously all of California, and that's quite a large chunk. We're gathering dealers as time goes on. We currently have, like I said, in Washington and Oregon, EnableMart is selling the things for us. We have a couple of dealers that we're probably going to be bringing along in the New York area, but that's it. Anybody can see one if you're in anywhere close to us or at any of these trade shows, but you can order these. We have a 30-day money back on them anyway, so if it's something that you really don't like or don't want or can't use, then you just send it back to us. Although I must say that in a first release product like this, I've never had this happen to us. We have had none of them come back.
Okay, thank you very much for your time, Robert. Do you want to just conclude now by giving people your contact information, and then if people want more information about the Assistive Technology Center or the DocuEdge, then they can contact you?
Yes, the Assistive Technology Center is on the web, and the website is www.assistivetechcenter.com. I may be contacted directly at bob@assistivetechcenter.com. Our phone number in the States is 916-956-2054. Our fax number is 916-914-2429. And if you get any message, we've just been frightfully busy over these with the scanners, and so you'll probably get the answering message. Please leave a message for us, and we promise to get back to you just as soon as we possibly can.
That's great, Bob, and thanks very much.